Hello, friends, and welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast for the 15th of February. I'm Paul White. We are officially in the second half of the second month of the year, and in all Bible study worlds of Old Testament text, we're in the second half of the book of Zechariah. And I'm saying Bible study world because this is the second half of two parts in the book of Zechariah, and it's technically we're heading over into nearly the second half of chapters. We're in the last part of the seventh chapter, which is a midway through a 14-chapter book, and today we will finish that chapter. It's been a short one. It's only 14 verses, and we did the first seven yesterday. This is part of that time that we told you would happen from time to time in this book where we go through some larger chunks on our way to some passages where we can slow down a little bit and find some meat. And most of those passages are in reference to the messianic arrival of Jesus and some of the things that he will accomplish. We've spent some time with some of those, for instance, in chapter 6, where he builds a temple. We talked about that temple and what it looks like. And we spent some time in chapter 3 where there's Satan standing in front of the high priest and the robes being placed upon him. And chapter 4 where you get to shout grace, grace to your mountains. And so there's been all kinds of amazing things. Today gets into some disobedience that resulted in the captivity of Israel. I don't know how much time you've taken in the Old Testament to really examine the removal of Israel from their land, what Zechariah, a token appearance of the phrase the Holy Land in the latter part of chapter 2. That's the only place in the Bible you hear that phrase, although you would think, based upon how people throw that around, that's a common biblical reference to the Middle East, is the Holy Land. But if you've not taken time to do some extra biblical studies in some of these things in regards to Israel being taken out of the land and what caused Israel to get the land and the land promises, I would like to encourage you to take a look and just examine this from some other sources. A book I would recommend, I don't do this very often, but a couple of years ago, I read a book by Gary Burge called Jesus and the Land. And if you want some good Old Testament backdrop as to how Israel felt about the land promise, and then you want to walk that promise through the New Testament, how Jesus felt about the land promise in his ministry and how Paul felt about the land promise, Jesus and the Land by Burge is a great read for that. And I think from time to time, it's probably a good idea for me to throw in the names of some books that might help you in these journeys. Please understand that when I do that, I'm not endorsing every word of that book or the author in any situation, because I don't want someone to read a book and go, this must be exactly how Paul White feels. That's not the point in referencing a book. The point might be that there's some things in there that take you deeper into some of these areas, and so you go do your own exploration. That's a good place to start. Let's read the last half of chapter 7 as we talk about some of the disobediences that resulted in the Babylonian captivity of the Israelites. The word of the Lord came to Zechariah, verse 8, saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, execute true justice, show mercy and compassion. That's loving kindness, by the way. Everyone to his brother. Do not oppress the widow or the fatherless, the alien or the poor. Let none of you plan evil in his heart against his brother. And this is really the crux of the old covenant. All the way back in Exodus 22, God begins to tell Israel, look, if you want to inherit the land and you want to stay there, you better treat people with fairness, and you better not oppress the widow, the fatherless, the stranger, or the poor among you. And the stranger is a biggie, because the stranger's non-Jews. So if they're in your land, you better treat them with respect. Don't plan evil against your brother. And Jesus had to take that and reimagine it in his day, because someone comes to him in Luke 10 and says, well, who's my brother? Who's my neighbor? And Jesus, of course, gives the story of the Good Samaritan, which is Jesus saying, you don't ever know exactly who might be neighborly to you, so you need to treat everyone as if they're your neighbor. Take that burden of responsibility upon yourself to identify your neighbor by being kind to everyone around you. And this is the command that God gave them. Here's what they do with it. Verse 11, they refused to heed. They shrugged their shoulders. They stopped their ears so that they could not hear. Yes, they made their hearts like flint. They refused to hear the law and the words which the Lord of hosts had sent by his Spirit through the former prophets. Thus great wrath came from the Lord of hosts. Therefore it happened that just as he proclaimed, and they would not hear, so they called out, and I would not listen, says the Lord of hosts. But I scattered them with a whirlwind among all the nations which they had not known. Thus the land became desolate after them, so that no one passed through or returned, for they made the pleasant land desolate. And this was the end result of Israel's disobedience in the land. This is not the end result of people committing individual sins. This is, I think, lost on us in the grace community sometime. We talk about Israel had a covenant with God, and if they went out and broke the Ten Commandments, God would kick them out or God would judge them. And most of us don't teach it from the perspective of national Israel had a national covenant with God that kept them in the land. Individuals didn't have an individual covenant with God, but they did have a path by which to try and ease their conscience. Didn't work. Of course, God knew it wouldn't. Hebrews says they still had an evil conscience. But they could offer up sacrifices for individual sins or sacrifices for praise or sacrifices for petition. The sacrificial system was just a river of blood. But if they wanted to stay in the land, they were going to have to treat the widow, the fatherless, and the poor with respect and the stranger. And they didn't do that. And thus they lose their position in the land. And half of the Old Testament is coming back out of the captivity. And that captivity happens because they were disobedient, because they didn't heed, they shrugged their shoulders, they stopped their ears, they made their hearts like flint, they refused to hear the law of the word of the Lord, and because of that, their land became desolate. That's how 7 ends, because it's showing the disobedience of Israel's resulting captivity. When you go into chapter 8, you're going to see this prophecy of Jerusalem, a holy city of the future, and we'll begin to show how God starts to speak beyond just a city and get into some deep prophetic language that will see its fulfillment in the New Testament. And if you're going to do this, you're going to have to bring a Messiah into it, and that's exactly where Zechariah is going to go. And once he brings the Messiah in, he's going to prophesy that bringing the Messiah in was only part of the plan. The other part of the plan is to give Israel a way out of their old covenant. And that's where Zechariah finds his great voice in the 11th chapter, where God gets an opportunity to break that old covenant with Israel. We're on our way to that. This exciting journey has really only just begun. We'll get busy again tomorrow in the top of chapter 8. I'll see you then. God bless.